Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley and I'm the one doing the hosting for this episode. And I am joined by Vangelda and Corey. For the record, we might have a guest who will join us a bit later. He goes by the name of Zuba. I'm sure a few of you might know him from the Sunday Fufu podcast. But for now, we have Corey and Vangelda. I think I'll start with Corey because Corey, be like since they just up this weekend. So Corey, what's up?
Everything cool. Everything all right.
Oh, good to know. Vangelda.
Hello to our lovely listeners and viewers. I'm not saying they miss me. Maybe they miss them.
Nobody can talk to
me. I don't know. See tweets or something.
Yeah, wow. Because I don't see anything like that. So
I really haven't.
You almost spoil my intro. Make I just say hello to the lovely viewers and listeners. I'm happy to be here once again. I hope everybody be cool.
Bye, guys. Good.
And yes, we have Zogba, our guest, on for this episode. I'm sure a lot of you probably know him from the Sunday Fufu podcast, which for some reason has been off our screens for a while now. But yeah, Zogba, what's up?
I'll be cool. Shall my battery die as they are the car house? We're right here, I can't catch us. So.
Don't worry, we are just about to start, so you're not late at all. So anyway, it's been a long weekend of football action, so let's just jump right into it. And obviously, we are going to start with probably the biggest match in English football at the moment. Maybe some people might attack
me. Stop that thing immediately at once.
Vangelda,
the biggest match on the weekend.
Vangelda, Smiley was talking. Smiley was talking.
Yeah. For the past few seasons, they have been number one and two. So I think for now, we can give them that respect as the two.
There has been one, and then there's another guy that have been trying to do some.
But because don't be rude. Football right now. Honestly, tell me.
Well, the top two right now is Liverpool and Man City. So
don't be ridiculous. So right now, if Brighton do second, you will talk to them.
All and all be say. Liverpool and Man City are the top two. One, all of them win some before.
So Liverpool and Man City are the best game in England right now.
Sorry, I don't acknowledge pretenders.
No, so what you're saying is
acknowledge pretenders.
You are speaking Zogba.
Oh yeah, me, I don't acknowledge pretenders.
You're arguing with somebody whose team gets more players than they can count for. So later on in the podcast, I just go fit tell him say, oh, but don't be what you talk. Because the toe-to-toe talk, me, you know be congruent arguments. So me, I set up the basis right now. So say the congruence will follow. Yeah.
You know what? Please, we are not going to have a whole debate on which match is the biggest match in English football at the moment. The main topic at hand is the fact that Arsenal and Man City drew 2-2 over the weekend in a very, maybe I would say, action-packed first half. The second half was a bit, it went differently because for obvious reasons. And let me start with Zogba, who is our guest. How do you feel about how the game went? And in particular, the red card that changed the outlook of the game?
It wasn't a red card. I'm really sorry. Like, this isn't even bias, right? Like, I don't think, okay, strictly by the letter of the law, it's a red card, right? Cool. He kicked the ball away after the whistle. Hey, you have to give a yellow card for that, whatever. But we keep talking about thresholds for referees, right? And we keep talking about how it's down to the discretion of the referee, right? I don't understand how every time the discretion of the referee seems to not favor something that almost every other player in the league does. Do you get what I mean? Like when a player gets fouled and they don't feel like they were fouled fairly, a lot of them kick the ball for whatever they believe the next counter-attack or the next phase of play is going to be. And usually referees are like, okay, like, don't do that. Caution, warning. Game keeps going. But for some reason, I guess maybe because we were punished earlier and we are the example that they don't want other people to follow. Every time one of our players does that, it's like, oh my God. Yeah, but he should have known better. He should do... It's okay. Like, I know Vex say we get the red card, really. But I just think that it's an unfair I think it's
Ivovex.
No, I think it's an unfair assertion of a law that a lot of people get away with, if we are being very honest. Because every game week, we see other players doing this who don't get punished. But our players always get punished for it. By a red? You know, like if it was a yellow, I get it. By a red, come on.
Technically, it was a yellow.
What?
Technically, it was a second yellow, so...
Haven't you ever watched a game where somebody does, like, a tackle that you know should be a second yellow, but the ref didn't give it because he knows it would be a red and it would ruin the game? We've all seen that happen in games before.
Okay. May I just be with this question?
No. Bangoda, why did you interrupt the guy they talk?
I'm not interrupting. I'm talking to you, Tiffin. I just get one question.
You missed me the question.
If Trossard was not on a card... and the referee gave him a yellow card for that, would you have complained?
Yeah. Would I be mad?
Yeah, they gave him a yellow card. Okay.
I wouldn't.
But I guess
the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that in English football, we've seen tons of times. Come on, Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira, all of these players knew. You get your first yellow. There's a threshold you have to cross to get your second yellow because referees would be like, okay, like, we don't want to send you off. We want the game to keep going. We want 11 versus 11 because it's a big game. We don't want to ruin the game. But for a second yellow for something like that, to me, it seems very absurd. I don't think it's a reasonable second yellow. That's all I'm saying. Do any of you guys think it's a reasonable second yellow?
I mean, for me,
perfectly reasonable to me. I don't know about you, but for me,
of course, it's going to be reasonable for you.
But it is a reasonable yellow.
My opinion means absolutely nothing at this point. But
no,
I won't make Smiley answer the question because
first of
that's
all,
Smiley, they can answer before you
go elbow somebody in back.
But God, at the back, Smiley, they talk.
Sorry,
then,
Smiley,
then ask them the question. We interrupt.
You know, the thing is, me obviously, I'm going to put myself in their shoes. If it was my club that they gave such a red card to, I'll not be happy. Because for me, the rules, they are becoming this a bit too harsh. I know they said something about... I know they said something about the fact that this season they are trying to clamp down more on these type of situations where players kick the ball away. But I think there should be some level of reasonable threshold that should
be
applied.
The word they are looking for is common sense. Common sense.
Because in the end, he kicked the ball away was like... like half a second after the whistle went.
0.5, thank you.
So, like, at least you should be able to give the player the benefit of the doubt and say that, okay, maybe he didn't hear the whistle early enough or something. It's not like it happened like seconds after and then he intentionally did it. Literally right after. And for me, if you're going to be given yellow cards, second yellows and stuff for these type of things, you're going to be ruining a lot of games like such as this one because this second half shouldn't have been the sort of second half we would get from such a huge game. Like, it just ruins it to some extent. So, like, I guess that, yes, if it was a first yellow, nobody would complain. But for second yellows, the threshold for a second yellow should always be higher than the threshold for a first yellow. And that's just how I see it.
Easy. These kind of things, me, I really like because you do what we want. People won't do like if it's because somebody they hit them or something. But the thing is obvious. One, the leap he did in the first place was a foul. He knew it was a foul. Right? He didn't have to kick it. Like it was a very foolish thing to do.
Wait, can I ask you a question? What leap are you talking about?
He elbow Bernardo in back.
You want to do facts. So I didn't beg. He bashed it to him.
It be English. It be semantics. This thing, it be semantics. Fine. He bashed. Fine. Let's use bashed. Right? Even if he bashed it.
50-50, by the way.
Did you see where his head was? He not reached the ball like... And Bernardo is quite short.
They are both short.
And he like in his head, dentist no de Bernardo in like they like in his shoulder or something.
I just want to say one thing.
Really what quick. You want? Make I do my point finish here.
Okay, you finish.
Right. And one, for me, I just think Arsenal generally are just in discipline. That's my own. Last season, Chelsea was an indisciplined team. At the start of the season, they told everybody, if you get foul, when you complain, yellow. Chelsea players, if they get foul, no, everybody, they rush referee, they go complain, everybody, they eat yellow card like beans. This season, Declan Rice has already been red carded for a similar thing already. He had no business kicking that ball away. Like, I get it. You say, he had no business kicking that ball away.
Hey. Took, like, apply this steps. Context to the whole league. Apply this rule you're talking about to the whole league.
It should apply be the whole league.
This rule you're talking about to the whole league. Because you're nitpicked.
I know the nitpick.
This guy has already been red carded. How many people have been double yellowed for shit like this in the league in the past?
How many teams with players on a yellow have done exactly three per game week?
You know, come plus that's it. Apply it to the whole league.
Wait,
for you.
Wait, Curry. Was he on a yellow? No, my question is...
It's about the rule. It's about the enforcement of the rule. Relax. You don't talk about the rule, not the matter. No, everybody knew about the rule.
Everybody knew
about this rule, but the point is that it is being applied on a very selective basis. How many people? There have been so many examples since this Declan Rice thing happened. It's been a talk for 2 weeks. The whole international breaks plus this one, 3 weeks. People have been talking about this thing. People have kicked balls away and things. No yellow has happened. As soon as Arsenal do it, yellow, red card. Don't give me that BS, bro.
And this is exactly why I say that it was very foolish on the part of Trossard to kick it away. Because I'm pretty sure within the circles of Arsenal, they had 3 weeks to talk about it.
So your captain, as you video himself say, they record racist chants. That one there.
No be high threshold
there. That one, make them go give him yellow card or red card.
It not be accident.
No, I didn't ask you a question. Make them go give him yellow card or red card.
Wait. I'm asking a simple question.
Wait.
I haven't finished my question. My question is, when he did that, is it something that you feel is a reasonable offense to pardon? Because maybe it was a mistake.
I don't think it's a reasonable offense to pardon. I think that...
Oh, so you don't think you should pardon for it at all?
I think he should be punished according to what the law says. It's
and what would that punishment be?
I don't know. Only the FA knows. See, ban, probably. I don't know.
He should be punished according to the law, right?
The problem is that
when this law is being selected and used, I decide when I want to be lenient, I decide when I want to be hard. He spoilt a spectacle at halftime, at the end, the last kick of the game.
It's ridiculous that your player decided that the last kick of the game, I'm gonna be stupid and kick the ball away.
Arsenal players are the only ones that kick the ball away, right?
That's not what I've said. We are talking about this particular situation.
That point, which is a point that is makes the whole that's what you're basing your whole argument upon.
So when Del Pedro kicked the ball, that was forgiven the
law. My argument is premised on one thing and one thing alone.
When João Pedro kicked the ball, they don't forgive him yellow.
They'll forgive him yellow.
Okay, when Doku kicked the ball, they don't forgive him yellow.
Doku, he was kicking the ball back to where the foul was. Because where did he start from the ball?
And he won't put Van Gaal in position. You are lying. Declan Rice was standing where the foul took place. And when Doku kicked it, the first thing he did was, what the hell was that? And the ref looked at his face. No, supposed to be back there. Eventually, they kicked the ball back to Declan Rice where he was standing, and they took the free kick from there. So we cannot have seen he was kicking the ball.
So basically, Arsenal enclosed with the ball.
Look, the foul happened in their half. Declan Rice was standing in half. He kicked the ball back into our half. What are you talking about?
Relax.
You know what I'm saying? Let's start coming.
Relax. Let's grant you that. he kicked the ball back to where it was supposed to go. The whole point is you're not supposed to kick the ball after the whistle has gone. That's the rule, right? Because you'll be delaying the restart.
So but whether not, but you see, that's the thing I'm saying. He's not delaying the restart. If the ball is supposed to be kicked from where he sent it back to, he's actually enhancing the restart.
Did you just bypass everything I just told you?
Because, what you talk there, it there somewhere. Because me too, that be what I see. Let's talk about it.
The ball back to where it's supposed to go. If nobody did it, he go repeat the ball, right? The ball will go past that place.
Oh, but somebody did it.
Then and somebody they bid you say if nobody
I think okay, you, fine, you need to watch a replay of this.
If nobody did it, it would delay the restart. If you want to argue if you want to argue, wait. Mm-hmm. What I am saying is that, one, let's not run away from the fact that what Trossard did was stupid. Like, that be what Liverpool no one accepts. Say what you do, be foolish. Two, if you want to argue that the law has been applied selectively, fair enough on you. However, was the decision correct or not? If it be say it no be yellow, where they give him yellow, we are going to talk to the referees be shit, them fool, this, that. However,
as we play Chelsea, I beg, make a day the pot stop it. I beg you. Hey, I will pay you money.
You will put the dark arts you do for your corner kick, that is, obstruct goalkeepers, that is. If they start to penalize that, and you figure you will get more players when they did there at the end of the match.
Go ahead, Corey, please.
You know the funny thing about this dark arts thing? Why is it that when Arsenal is doing dark arts, not a big problem? I'm a little confused about that.
The issue is, I'm explaining it to you before you continue. The issue is that for a very long time, Arsenal Football Club and their fans demonized other teams and other clubs because they played exactly the way Arsenal is playing now. Okay, Telling us that's not how football is supposed to be played. Now, when you enjoy the team, all of a sudden, it'll be acceptable. All of a sudden,
Pause. Vangela, relax. You said that Arsenal for so long were complaining about dark arts. Wait, you can't beat them, you fucking join them.
Continue.
Now that Arsenal's doing dark arts, all of a sudden, none of the shit that we've done is illegal. Blocking a keeper is not. If we are doing this in a smart way and you haven't thought about it, and you don't get set piece coach where you could teach people how they go do that thing. We cannot tell me say be dark art. We run from back. If your keeper is lost in the sauce, wait enough you come out, with a head ball over, it be dark art. If it says IQ, you put your head die. That's why you know if you get set pieces where it's called.
You know the funny thing? The Mourinho people they masturbate to. You know we saw that they do. Your Mourinho
selective attacks.
No problem. But guess what? Guess what's also not illegal? If you kick the ball away, you get a yellow card. True. And then if you're already on the yellow, you get a red.
I wanted to finish attacking you first.
Fair enough, fair enough. Please, go
on. To be very honest, it wasn't smart on Trossard. It was 0.5 seconds. It was close, but it was a stupid thing for him. Very, very stupid. Because He not just tap the ball away, he put him into the air. And so, you know, if you tell me, say, they try pass ball, or maybe you could use the excuse, say, he thought it was the
end. He try flick him on, then start counter. He kicked the ball, go rosy.
Why did he? It wasn't really smart. Fine. Yellow card. By the letter of the law, yellow card, send him off. But you also need to take into context the game that you're refereeing. And the problem that has been touted up in the last 3 weeks has always been about consistency. If you're doing A, then do B. You can't say you won't do A, then when B does it, hey, you know, yeah. Like, come on, bro. You always get this animosity that grows towards ref, this constant PGMO questions. And I'm not even talking about this from just an Arsenal point of view. This is happening to other teams as well. There have been horrible refereeing calls in these past 5 games. I was like, so you put the whole summer, you put not learn anything from Euros, from all the tournaments that people, like, do you put not learn anything of, and you know, it will touch everybody. People, they laugh at gender, you know, it's funny, it's bad, it's fine, but it will touch everybody in their own, in varying degrees. Our issue is that let's be consistent in these things. If you are, that's why Arteta talk say, from what this ref do, I didn't expect, say, 100 games will be played 10v10 or 10v11. Because if this be the premise is set, then let's carry it out. This is the same thing they did last season with the throw-ins. And if you waste time with throwing, no yellow card, they didn't give anybody any timing. They started at the beginning of the season, the first like 5-10 games. Giddy, no yellow, giddy, no yellow. Eventually, if you watch from like the 10th game all the way to the end of the season, it died out. So why bring a rule that is going to affect 1/3 of the season, and then the rest of the season challenge is not going to work? But I mean, once you punish teams, and there's more talent, look, the title was lost on 2.2. 2 points. It is by fine margin. So when you take, you sent off a player in the Brighton game, we ended up drawing that game. You sent off a player in this spectacle, still, we ended up drawing. You've spot 2 games already, just off the top of my head, you just spot two games by rash decisions. If you are taking your time, he didn't give himself time, Michael Oliver, he didn't give himself time to think about what had happened. This guy has sent off 7 Arsenal players in like 3 or 4 years. If you're not giving yourself time to analyze what is going on, do you know how many people are watching this game? Whether Wenger chooses to accept it or not, it is one of, if not, at least so far, is the biggest game of the season. And you killed the spectacle at halftime. How many people are watching this? How many people are always complaining every week about refs? I don't know whether they think bad press is good press or it doesn't really matter, but they keep producing these horrendous refereeing decisions that affect the outcomes of games. And it cannot continue throughout the whole season. Else, what would be the point? Somebody go train the whole week. It can't match up. You can't do something queer and all. You say, it'll be red card. You change the whole dynamic. Why? Let's all enjoy the game 11-11. If you score me, I say, Charlie, then you score me, I'll go house D. But this one, everybody is now talking about refereeing instead of the game. Nobody's analyzing the game. Everybody is saying that, oh, Michael Oliver did this. He changed the spectacle. He changes the... It can't continue. What's Van Gaal?
And to be honest, right, I think, like, with regard to the red card, like, what happened, bro, like you said, like, how honest are we being with ourselves right now? Like, how many players would do that and
they
get away with
all
this?
Their careers? Their whole careers, that's what players do. It's a reflex.
Did you listen to any of the post-match press, like, anybody speaking post-match? No, I'm asking Van Gelder and Smiley. Did you listen to any of the post-match?
All I know is say, yeah, right, say it was a very foolish thing for Trossard to have done. And that, by the basis of the law, it was a red card. That'd be
okay.
All the law.
Smiley, how about you?
I didn't listen to the post-match stuff because me, already the match, I was like, my attention was divided. But me, the main thing for me is that the referees, like divided, I said, they need... the referees, they need to apply common sense to these things. Because for me, in that moment, I think you should make a very quick decision in your head. Which decision would I make that would cause the least controversy? If he hadn't given a yellow card and a red card for that decision, it wouldn't have been a talking point after the game. It should have been business as usual. So for me, like, in that moment, you should just be able to make a decision like, yes, which decision would cause the least controversy? And then on top of that too, in the end, like, when you kick the ball away for that, if you are saying delaying the restarts, blah, 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 the time that is wasted from giving a red card and the arguments and all of those things is far more than the time that's...
Just picking up the freaking ball, bro, and adding 30 seconds to the end of the clock. Like, I didn't understand that.
Because there's already a sanction in any case for time wasting. Like, you can add extra time, 30 seconds, 1 minute. There's already a sanction for that. So there's no need to make it a whole spectacle on its own just because somebody kicked the ball away and wasted 2 seconds. So because of 2 seconds, they've argued for 2 minutes just over whether the player has for goal or not for goal. Like, it's very, it doesn't make sense to me.
You see, my headache in that is that you say there's already a sanction. But when we have the Arsenal coach coming out and saying that, and they put this amount of, and they played over it, and that's when they scored. All of a sudden, it's not so clear-cut anymore, is it?
Because nobody has argued that point, Vangada.
I'm just building.
You made an assertion. You say Arteta can't talk, see that extra minute that nobody, because that that 2 minutes that add-on was for Arsenal, I think it was Raya or something going down in the second minute. So nobody,
But that's the point I'm making. If your coach, who has seen his players waste time and all those things, delay restarts, Raya has gone down, as they are playing on, Timber Toussaint go down, then this, then that, and the referee has extended.
So if I get make a no good,
go down on the side. Go down on the side.
Is that what players do? They walk over to the side. That's what every player does, right? They walk over to the side and fall down, right?
Fair enough.
Arsenal players, if you hurt, make you go to the side and go down. You don't localize the thing to Arsenal players.
Me, I don't talk to Arsenal players, but all I'm saying is that if we know that that's what players do, if we know that there's a penalty for wasting time, and that is additional time on the extra time, why is Arsenal coach complaining about that then? Why is he complaining that he put 7 minutes, we played 9 minutes, and it is within the 7 minutes, and then up to the nine minutes time? No,
right now, that extra time. On the side of the law, or are they lying?
Oh, me, all my argument we say, as Corey talk, they're go catch everybody.
Yeah, next so week, you argue on the side
this
of the
weekend,
law right now.
Chelsea then Brighton go play. Something go catch me for that team side. Yeah, go vex me. But
you
What I don't want Arsenal fans to do is to pretend like the law is the incompetence of the English referee is only visited on Arsenal Football Club. That thing you started to do last year. Where me that thing they bore me. Every time, baby, you people prepared and they cheat you.
Relax.
Vangelda, so right now, you be them people where they say, police say make you no go protest. So why you go protest?
No, that don't be what are they talk. That be totally different scenario. First of all, police say make you no go protest. It be illegal. Police will tell you say make you no go protest. You know, bab. Why if you go steal goats, where they catch you, they take you go court, then jail you 8 years. Where you the complaint say why then jail me 8 years? Where somebody else goes steal something, then jail him 2 years. Where the team be say if you still go, you won't be 8 years. If you still pen, you won't be 2 years. You know if you complain. You know if you complain.
Let's move the conversation away from the red card and talk more about the match.
I want to talk about the match. Relax.
Let's talk about the match. So obviously Arsenal managed to hold on. Like even though like they weren't able to hold on to the lead, but they still got a result out of the game, which is a very impressive thing to do against Man City, because nine times out of ten, if you play against Man City for 45 minutes with 10 men, you are going to lose.
55 minutes.
So the fact that they were able to get something out of the game, it's especially at the Etihad, is a very impressive thing. So what do you think of Arsenal's chances of winning the league now, after such an impressive result against the favorites?
They won't win.
Ask Van Gaal, because the other guys,
it's not long. They won't win. They won't win. It'd be simple as that. They won't win. Their chances are as it was last year, 2 years ago, and at the beginning of the season. They have a good chance to run and push City to the end. But in the end, they won't win. That'd be their chances. I want to talk about something where everybody talk, it changed the second half. On the evidence of what Arsenal would do for Bergamo, I'm telling you, that is exactly how Arsenal would have played with 11 men.
You know the funny thing, you can never judge that because it was 10v11. So you making that assertion. Arsenal could play the same way is complete BS, because you cannot make
it's
that.
It's not. I've only made that judgment. I've based it on the evidence of Arsenal's play 3-4 days ago, where they had 11 players.
Don Carlo of freaking Madrid goes Etihad, what he go do? He go play the game everybody wants. He go open his ass, give City, make City bank. Because that's what you do. You have to play the ball according to the people you are playing. In 3 days, we had 3 away matches back to back. Even in that, people got rest. But everybody is talking about how we went to go and do. We have played this game without our midfield. We have played these 3 games. We go away Villa, we go away Tottenham, we go away Atalanta, we go away City. And they beg you, if any of your clubs had that kind of run, by now you put, we took 7 out of 9. How many? You put go take like 1 or 2 saves.
So let me base the question. So are we today here, as we sit here, invalidating that your £150 million midfield, you no need?
Which £150?
£150 million, maybe £50 million. The two together, I know we have 50.
Wait, can I say something really quick?
Okay.
See.
Is that our
Did you remember?
Midfield?
No, wait, relax. Let me ask Van Gelder a question. Did you read the Atalanta's head coach's, his comments after the game?
I don't need to read his comments after the game.
I'm not.
The Haram ball.
You didn't.
I'm asking if you read it.
I didn't.
Okay. Can I tell you what it said?
Okay, tell me what he says.
He said, I don't know Mikel Arteta as a person. But as a coach, he has my utmost respect. So me, I will tell you, say, you play football manager.
I retire, but I didn't understand that.
Why you retire?
Charlie, life hard. Wait till they go on.
Okay. So,
facts.
So
it means
they then catch you where you know if you restart, make the restart me for you. So they bam. What I'm saying is that, right, other coaches respect what Mikel Arteta is doing. You might not. You might think it's harambo. Relax. You might think it's harambo. You might think he's defending. But your own, like I said, the coach that you people are, you have orgasms over, your Mourinho, this was his bread and butter, right? Going to places and, smiley at the lie.
Now me when you pull me come inside.
You see, your problem is you think I don't love it. No,
I don't know why you answer question where I ask Smiley.
No, you ask me first. Where they tell you say
right? Smiley.
Okay, so what be the question again?
At the busy you say Mourinho, you know, be sold in tactics day. Wasn't he the master of? We defended the low block, we counter-attack and we win.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Smash and grab.
Isn't that what Arteta is doing now?
Yes, basically.
Okay. So, if we can respect Mourinho as a tactical genius for doing that, why are we calling what Arteta is doing something that is almost like dirty or...
Sorry. But the problem, again, you are ascribing things to me that I haven't said or implied. I have not said anywhere. I've not talked Arteta is not a good coach. Neither have I not said I'm not impressed by it. Your problem, your issue is you think that I find this kind of football disgusting. No, me, as a Chelsea fan, I love it. For me, this is football. Yesterday, when the match ended, Corey, what did I say? Huge respect to who? To Arsenal, because it's not easy to go to Etihad and pull off what Arsenal did, especially with 10 men. But my point is that everybody keeps saying that the red card changed the trajectory of the game. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But I'm just saying, on the evidence of what I saw Arsenal do at Bergamo on Tuesday, I'm not surprised that they did exactly what they did at the end of the second half. And I think with a 2-1 lead, even with 11 players, that's exactly how they would have played. Maybe they would have attacked a bit more. But defensively, the defensive performance that they put up, the shape and everything, they would have stuck to that. They wouldn't have moved 1 inch. They wouldn't have given City one yard of space to even pass the ball through. So make you not assume, say, because I say that be exactly how the game like he go. They mean say I did disrespect Arteta. No, I rate Arteta. He's a very good young coach, doing very well. Like he has the way he has changed Arsenal's team. Arsenal didn't used to be a very physical team. Right now, you can't bully Arsenal. Arsenal didn't used to be very good, like defensive, like solid. They used to be tiki-taka, beautiful football. Right now, they know how to play in a low block. They know how to play counter-attacking. They know if we can't pressing game, then that is they go free play. He has three different types of play or structures that he can implement depending on the opponent he's playing against. Kudos to him. Fantastic work that he has done. But make we no can't tap here then do like if like then get 11 players, then go come play some free flowing attack. Oh,
no,
this no block to the police deputy, no, like they go play.
Nobody
this one, no.
Van Gerder, the reason why people are saying it changed the trajectory of the game is that at the time the red card had happened, it was 2-1. The game ended 2-2. So in everybody's logical mind, that changed the trajectory. Because the trajectory was that these people were winning. In football, it could have been with the 11-11, we go end the game 3-2 for City. Yeah, you understand what I mean? Within 11-11, it could have ended 3-1 to Arsenal. It could have still ended at 2-1. No. But people are just saying that it changed the trajectory of the game because that's not the way the game ended.
Which is fair. I'm just saying, for me, on the evidence of Bergamo, me so no like you go play the second half. So
I
no.
do think, I low-key have to agree with you that I don't think with 11 men, it would have been too different from what we saw in the second half. But also would have had an extra man. Like, not having an extra man.
I think would have had an outset.
You see, not having an extra man against City at the Etihad, 40 games unbeaten. Charlie, that is not a joke.
It's a big deal. Because having an outset is a huge thing.
It's a huge thing. So it's neither here, here or there. May I say, it'd be a good point.
Everybody could talk to me and they like the bring Chelsea. I just want the record to reflect that. Chelsea did some at Camp Nou against Pep Guardiola's all-time Barca with Bosengwa at centre back. But hey, what am I? Sorry.
So anyway, still on Arsenal. Like I said, this is a result that, despite the circumstances, is probably something that gives you a lot of confidence going ahead.
100%.
At the same time, you've also lost a very key member of your team in Martin Odegaard for I'm not sure how many weeks or months.
Till November.
Yes. So how much do you think you're going to be affected by his absence, Corey?
That's a very difficult question to answer because we have played easily the toughest week of our season so far. Without our talisman, without our captain, and we've come through basically unscathed, undefeated. So, based on that, I have to say it's looking good for now. But our next couple of games are not. It's not what we just went through. We are playing Leicester and things like I didn't talk this, then Leicester go bang
me. That be what me I want to talk about TV. Cool. You the move
no,
anyhow.
No. But on a more serious note, it hurts us. I think we've lost a lot of creativity. And the one who do they create, give me small, decide say it goes, it's going to go and get sent off in this game. This Ethan boy, I want to see him against Bolton in the League Cup and see what he can do in that position. Because Havertz in that position, defensively, he'll do the work for you. But I don't think he's an Odegaard. He's an AM.
Must I speak the truth? He can't pass. Just talk the thing as he did. He cannot
you see,
pass.
No, and you're wrong. Because he last season against Tottenham, he banged crossfield ball to Saka, pinpoint, make his score goals. And they cool down.
And they talk about this season. This season with the inside.
Oh, relax.
This year, 2020.
I know you're basing this based on the stats of he completed zero passes in the second half.
That thing is punishable by jail. They have to jail him. He's a terrorist. No. He's a terrorist.
Let's also understand the context of the game. It wasn't 90 plus. It was for the second half.
So 55 last minutes. He didn't complete.
It was for the second
pass. Sideways pass, Sakurai, he didn't complete. Restart of the as he go to.
Did you see the possession stats? I think it was 91%, 91%, 8% or something.
22, 25 shots, 0. Hey, so as you get the ball, you know if you pass to Martinelli, keke.
No, it don't come inside. It don't come inside.
Hey, no, that guy has to be. No, he has to do. He has to do. He's a criminal. He has to do.
I'll come in. So based on that, I think it has affected us, the creativity, and I do want to see what the full midfield can do for the rest of the season. That's with Merino, Rice, and Odegaard. Because Partey, his legs are gone. Jorginho's legs went last season. He didn't have legs. He never had legs. So if you say you go play transition games against some people, you'll be punished 100%. But with Rice, Merino, and Odegaard, I won't see the possibilities. Whether we can, I think we should be able to handle the next four games and win that with based on the people that we have, on the personnel that we have. But give me my first team, my first choice midfield, and then I want to see what they can do before I can, because I haven't seen them play before. I can't make that judgment.
Sorry, I have a question. Me, I've not seen this Merino guy play, so I don't know what to expect. Can you just briefly kind of like describe what his game style is? And two, maybe people know they talk the thing. The way Zogba they look me, I know they like. But people know they talk about in the past two games, I don't know what's going on with Bukayo Saka. But he seems like he's been out of sorts.
He'd be very cool.
You know why.
In the last four games, he's assisted every single game.
And that
two of that be corners. Are you trying to tell me that corner delivery doesn't matter?
No, so I'm not saying that.
Are we doing that right now?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that since you don't have Odegaard for the next say 3 to 4 matches. Saka is somebody you can look up to for that creativity. I don't think you should look up to have it. You won't get
Saka,
it.
Saka, Jesus. I actually want to see a lot more Jesus because I do think Jesus has that chaos factor to create something out of nothing.
That guy, he let Havertz snatch his chain.
I'm actually really, really concerned that Odegaard is out because our next few games are against weaker opponents. And those are the kind of people who we need our most creative players against. Because those guys are going to play a low block the same way we did against City today. And if we don't have the tools to unlock their defense, we're going to struggle to score goals.
I can tell you, Odegaard's impact on that is not too high. Odegaard always had the pre-assist and not really the assist.
That's fair.
Yeah, but when you are playing a low block, when you are playing against a low block team,
he wasn't the one that was going to thread a through pass through the defense.
No, but
too.
He's the one that will switch the play in order to shift them to get the space.
We have players who do switch play.
No, but even his pressing, right? Because like the
his president Havertz to depress. Havertz to depress from a
But I think
position.
There's a fundamental difference between Odegaard and Havertz, where Odegaard is one of the players who went like Odegaard is far has better passing range and also like creative vision than Havertz. Fundamentally, right?
Debatable.
Really?
Hey! Stop it.
Okay.
Stop it.
Do you know what I'm saying debatable? Do you know what I'm saying debatable? Make her land. Do you know what I'm saying debatable? Mm-hmm. Yes, Odegaard has the flair, the touches, the slickness. But Odegaard has okay. I'll say the passer. I can agree with that. I just tried the Newcastle or the Chelsea.
Why give that ball he gives
Gim Carrera? I don't think Havertz can do that. Oh, I haven't seen Havertz do
I mean, one might argue that Havertz own is the one against Tottenham. That crossfield ball to Bukayo Saka.
However, the reading
of how Odegaard reads the game. Odegaard is like always two to three thoughts ahead of everybody else.
Let me make
a very simple Odegaard is three thoughts. Havertz be like one and a half.
He'll be half.
Odegaard is like Seth Fabregas or Mesut Ozil. Right?
No.
Kai Havertz
I think Seth Fabregas and those people are better. At sure. passing.
But he's making a comparison.
Havertz
is like Granit Xhaka.
Yes.
Do you get what I mean? Okay. Yeah. So, like, there's that player who Mesut Ozil is, and then there's Granit Xhaka. Granit Xhaka is a great passer of the ball. He can make great passes, but he's not Mesut Ozil.
True.
Right? He's not Cesc Fabregas. I think that's the difference there. So that's why I'm worried, because I think for inferior opposition, we need the Fabregas, the Ozil to unlock.
When is the next international break?
Oh, it's in like November.
Is it October? No,
there's one in October.
October, yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out when.
I think it's 2 weeks.
Is it the beginning or the end?
I think it's about 2 weeks away or two or three weeks away.
Yeah.
Okay. In 2 weeks, we get back Moreno. And if I got to ask you a question about the kind of player Moreno is, even though he's not an Odegaard, he has better passing, I'd say, than Havertz.
Okay.
He does.
But that, I want to see what he unlocks in the midfield. What whether he'll reduce the pressure, the creative pressure on Odegaard or Odegaard's role. And I want to see what the Ethan can do in the Bolton game, because that would judge whether he'll be able to get starts or a look in against Leicester, against Southampton, against those guys. Because I can get some very nice folding like acceleration or something away from, but he's nowhere. Like, he doesn't cook. I don't think he's
like, we will now wait the bubbles that appear for the water to. You know,
he doesn't cook. The food is not ready to eat. But sure. I do think he can put Ethan in and let's see what a young boy can do. Else the boy not gonna grow. Why did he throw Foden and those people into big games? If you don't give them the chance, Charlie.
Let's talk a bit about Chelsea. So it looks like they are picking up a bit of form So Chelsea seem to be picking up a bit of form under Enzo Maresca. Make I remind people, say that when Danny Kaye was on this episode, on this podcast before the season started, he predicted that by game week 5, Chelsea would be 15th. But it seems like Chelsea, they are looking like a strong contender for top 4, which is unlike them for the past few seasons. Because for the past few seasons, then they hover around mid-table. So, Van Gelder, how do you feel about Chelsea's form in recent weeks? And do you think it's going to last?
I'm not getting carried away by our form. We are still in phase 0 of Enzo Maresca's tenure. Again, as I said, I didn't know anything about him when he was signed as Chelsea manager. So I didn't have any expectations, be big like that. Just play good football, just win matches. That's all I need. And let me see that the players are progressing and gelling, doing well. There are signs, the way Corey talks, Ethan, to Igeta, he go cook, but you know cook, no. That's where we are at, right? It looks like he has most of the players on side. I think there are still one or two tweaks that he still has to make. I still think the distances between our midfielders are a bit too much. And if we play a very high-pressing team, we might struggle a bit. But again, maybe by the time we go catch them, we go play those kind of teams, so then them perfect or them master how then they play, how Maresca wants them to play. So for me, as a Chelsea fan, all I want to see week in, week out is 3 points on the board, the club is moving forward, No, you say ask me to win. Nobody talks and we get 50 players. Immediately we win, we lose. Pay Kim. Hey, that be what should happen if you get 42 players. Meanwhile, after they do team picture, then there were literally only 26 players there. Just like every other team in the Premier League. Some way, somehow, then they count Chelsea players with them all day on their books. Every club will get 50 players if we count every player that is on the books of every club. But I digress. Chelsea is playing well. I don't want to get carried away by it because we've played teams that I expect that we will beat. With the exception of Crystal Palace, we drew 1-1 with them at Stamford Bridge. But Bournemouth, I expect that we'll beat them. It was a hard-fought victory in the end. But this is what happens when you are still, bubbling and learning how to play in a new way or in a new style. I think the players are gaining confidence and it's looking good. I don't want to get ahead of myself, so give me till like February. February, can I ask me this question again? If we're still there like fifth or fourth or something like that, then I will tell you what I think, if we'll make top four or not.
Speaking of players gaining confidence, Nicholas Jackson has started the season in very hot form. He's gotten, I think, 4 goals and 2 assists so far in 5 games. And an interesting stat I saw earlier this week was that him and Cole Palmer have combined for the most goals in the Premier League since the beginning of last season. How high do you think Nicholas Jackson's ceiling is? Do you people still think you'd want a better striker, or is somebody for the long term that you can rely on, especially since you've extended his contract to like 2035 or something?
It'll be 9 years. Billie Jean, dear, you know what I say, me, he'll be my boy. He'll be my boy. Somebody call him the striker. But if we list that person in team, they're my strikers, or they know the reach, my boy. I'm very happy, very, very happy for Nicholas Jackson. A lot of people underrated him last year. And he had constructive criticism. His finishing and his composure in front of goal was a problem. I think he's improved on that. There's still a bit of improvement that he needs to make up there. But, I mean, Cole Palmer is Cole Palmer, right? Best player in the league. I don't want to hear anything from anybody else.
What's
for
the
me
team?
At Chelsea, it's a very difficult question to answer. It's actually a very difficult question to answer. We may have too many talented players, and I'm not exactly sure on what Enzo's fixed system is. So I can't answer that question. However,
what's your best front line?
It'll be a 4 of Jackson up top. I know I don't want him, but he's our best left winger. So Sancho on the left, Palmer in behind. And personally for me, I'll play Pedro Neto on the right. But at the moment, Noni Madueke gets the nod ahead of him because Noni is performing at a higher standard than him.
So no room for Chris.
I think in our current setup, it's a bit tough to play Nkunku, not because he's not a good player, but because he can't be as efficient in these positions, especially on the wings. Because we will not drop Cole Palmer for Nkunku. Not because Nkunku is a bad player, just because Cole Palmer is that pivotal to Chelsea Football Club and the way we play. Sorry. But if, like, that's why you have a squad. That's why you bring such players in. If things are not going well, like for instance, last week against Bournemouth, Jackson started. He missed 3 glorious big chances. Nkunku came on. He turned a half chance to a goal. We won the game. Jackson sees that. He didn't like social media. He goes on social media. He sees that everybody's cussing him out. He says, you know what? Next week, me too, I could do my thing. They brought him in against West Ham. All eyes on me, 12:30. What does he do? Bang 2 goals. And for me, as a Chelsea fan, that's all I need. Everybody that steps foot on the pitch wearing a Chelsea jersey, 1 must give your all. 2 must do your best. Even if your best is not good enough, we want to see that you are doing your best. And if you improve the team, even if it's just by 1 yard, by doing a dash that the guy that played before you didn't do, that just moves us forward as a club. Right now, we be baby horse. Right? Now that they teach me how to walk. We don't all run safe. But they teach how to walk and things.
Your baby horse, there, you get plenty of diesel.
But calm down.
Vangelda, I know you say your squad no big and all of that, but at the same time, over the past few games, one thing we've noticed is that you are making early substitutions for certain players who seem to be playing well. And not necessarily playing well, but players who are usually used to getting more minutes. Like, for example, Nicolas Jackson, he was on 2 goals when he was substituted. He didn't look too happy. We've seen similar with other players. Sancho, I think he was taken off around the 55th minute. All sorts of things. Don't you think it's going to be an issue, considering the fact that it's not necessarily a case that your squad is big, but you have a lot of talented players who are also very young and hungry for minutes. Usually in other teams, maybe you have some old 29-year-old and a young player who that one is easier to balance the minutes between them. But when you have maybe two hungry 22-year-olds, everybody wants to play a lot of minutes. So don't you think it's going to become an issue somewhere down the line? Because Nkunku, for example, now seems like old news. Like how you're talking about him. He's never really taken over Chelsea, but yet he seems to have been brought down the pecking order. So,
it's not a matter of him being brought down the pecking order. It's more a matter of the person he's competing with, which is Nicolas Jackson, at the moment is outperforming him.
So he lowered him in the pecking order.
Yes, and that is just based on the evidence of performance. I think that in the short term, it's a very important and good place for us to be in. That we have young players, everybody competing for minutes. What does that mean? That means that every time anybody steps on the pitch, they don't know if that's the last time they will be on the pitch. Go base Mudrik. He hasn't seen grass for like 3 matches. My boy with that, but I'll make sad give up. Maybe Moreau against Barrow down, he go see grass. But if you don't perform, you don't play. And this is Chelsea Football Club. That is where the standard must be. If you don't perform, you have no God-given right to be in the starting 11 just because you are a big name or whatever. So everybody must pull their weight. Because if everybody pulls their weight, that means that Chelsea goes higher up the table. And we don't end the season mid-table, but we end up back in Champions League football. Right? So for me, in the short term, and I'm just talking in the short term, in the long term, it could be a problem. But knowing the owners and the directors of Chelsea, before it becomes a problem, then sell somebody. So for me, I'm not too worried about that or too fast about that, right? And for instance, in this game where we substituted Jackson early and Cole Palmer early, look, they were exhausted. They may not have liked that they were substituted, but they were exhausted, right? Because in the 3v2 situation that we were playing, where West Ham build up in a 3, and we had only 2 players initiating the press and triggering them into making mistakes, they had to do a lot of running and a lot of space covering. You can't do that for 90 minutes. You are 2 of our most important players. We need to manage your minutes. We need to manage your legs so that you don't get injured. Then when we need you the most, like November there, where we did here, you so say you can't score, then you get thigh injury, muscle injury, this. No. So if there are other equally talented people on the bench, you've gotten 60 minutes, you have your 2 goals, you have your 1 goal, 1 assist, buckle, sit down, relax your nerves, let somebody else to come and play, let them try. If they do better than you, maybe they will get Conference League match or they will get Barrow Town or something like that to play. Then the next game, like next on Saturday, we play against Brighton. It's going to be a very difficult game. We need all our best players in tip-top shape so that they can play. So it's very important. For me, it's very, very important that the manager does not just run everybody into the ground. Not every Chelsea player is Conor Gallagher. They are not all like him. They can't sustain that level that he has. He go if you play 90 today, 90 tomorrow, 90 later, he'll be certified Bolugbe. That'll be Conor Gallagher. But the rest of our players are not like that. So for me, I think what he did was right. As a top player, you will not be happy, of course. You are on a hat-trick. You want to get your hat-trick and take the ball home and be happy. So, of course, Jackson is not going to be happy that he was subbed off. But for me, I think it was the right decision by the referee. Because at the end of the day, it is the improvement of the team that is necessary.
But here's the thing. Let me, again, on that same question, let me give an example of like a team like Arsenal. They have on the left, they have Martinelli and Trossard competing for one position. Like you said, having competition is very important. But at the same time, if you have maybe that dynamic of a player like Trossard and a player like Martinelli, if Martinelli is playing, they are being rotated. Martinelli is the number one, obviously, but Trossard comes in, he impresses. It's easier to maintain that type of balance than to have maybe two Martinellis in that position, because that one, each one who doesn't play, is more, is harder to see yourself sitting on the bench for another player like that, rather than a situation where maybe the player is, maybe you have, if you're sitting on the bench for a player like Mbappe, like how Endrick at the moment is behind Mbappe in the pecking order, you know that he's clearly above you. So that one there, you go understand if you did behind him. But if I feel like me and this player, we're on the same level and I'm not getting enough minutes, that dynamic can be harder to manage. And that's where I think the issue can be. Because, for example,
I agree.
Have Pedro Neto, Sancho in one side. You have Nkunku, who is also like, Charlie, he's a former Bundesliga player of the season. And I expected him to be comfortable.
For me, as I said, I wanted us to get a tip-top striker in Osimhen to compete, or to at least, even if he takes up the number 9 spot and Jackson is giving him competition. I wanted us to do that. We didn't. So now, for Jackson, his competition is actually Christopher Nkunku. Right? At the end of the day, it be you touch, I touch. We all day, you poo-poo-poo-poo. Make everybody show in this scene. So, I know that Nkunku, in the conference, all the Conference League games we played, the qualifiers, he scored almost all our goals. In the Premier League, he's up and running. He has one goal. But it's not like Jackson is underperforming and we are still playing or pursuing it with Jackson. No. This, one thing I've really liked about Enzo Maresca is that he doesn't hold anybody like, oh, like you'll be my darling boy. Bro, the player he used last year in Drewsby Hall, before he got injured, I was not seeing pitch. He wasn't seeing the pitch because there were players ahead of him who were better. And it's simple as.
So why did we sign him?
So you signed a bench player from the Championship. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, there are a lot of teams that sign bench players from Championship too.
Personally,
I don't know why we signed him, but yeah, it's like what it is. We are. Leicester signed Maddison from the Championship. No. Harvey Barnes.
No, as in a bench player. Leicester, if you are saying he was benched in the Championship, like, so you are saying
I'm saying a lot of teams buy. Like, look, let's not look down the Championship. It's the Championship. I get it.
No, but you're saying Drewsby Hall was benched in the Championship.
No. I said that he was Maresca's darling boy in the Championship. When Maresca was coaching Leicester, Drewsby Hall was the most important player in his team. He was linking. He did dash the passes. They created the chances. But when he came to Chelsea...
So why would he sign him if he had no plans to start him?
But that's not... I don't even think it was Maresca who signed him.
His favorite player from his old team happens to come to his new team and it's not...
Wait. Let me explain it.
Maresca didn't sign the player who was
his... The interest... I'm saying that the interest in Drewsby Hall dates back maybe 2 to 3 seasons ago. Chelsea scouts already had interest in him, Dada. It just happened that
here's the problem I have with that thing. Teams scout a lot of players.
I don't agree with the signing.
Teams can have like 200 strikers on their scouting list. It doesn't necessarily mean that they planned on signing the player, but you just keep tabs on them. Like when Man United signed Wan-Bissaka, they said they scouted 800 right backs. The interest in all those right backs wasn't concrete interest. But maybe it's the fact that, maybe they scouted him. But Maresca came and he said that, yes, me, I want this guy. And you assume that, okay, because we scouted him 2 years ago, so we're already keeping tabs on him. You know, it just be short list. Maybe he did like...
Personally, I don't know why we signed him. Me, I'm not...
So you don't think the manager was involved?
I think that they probably asked him and said, look, we are thinking about signing Drewsby Hall. What do you think? What are your thoughts? But the way Chelsea operates right now, the manager does not have absolute control on who we sign. What do you say?
This is in relation to what Smiley was initially saying about the players and the positions. Right. Honestly, to bring us back on topic, he says something about having different
profiles.
Types of different profiles. That's the word I'm looking for. Different profiles of players in different positions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sancho, Modric, Madueke, Neto.
Mm-hmm.
You have some other people. Am I not mistaken?
No, that's four. That's four.
Okay, that's you're four. Then you have Cole Palmer, Felix, Nkunku.
Mm-hmm.
All in that position, right?
Yeah, all in the front.
And then you have Jackson and Nkunku back and Guyo,
like Morocco, maybe go play that one.
So I'm just wondering how you keep, you know, the names I've mentioned are not small boys because Madueke not the respect.
Hey, he be gang leader. If you try it, he go make that attack you for landing.
Thank you. Madueke not the respect. As soon as he starts, he's one of those players that look like they bitch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't play, which why Felix was a problem everywhere he went. Okay. From Atletico,
make you not make smiley to, boy, but go on.
To no, I'm just trying to say, like, the reason I'm saying is that I saw this with Obama when he was a problem at Dortmund and things, and he left in some crazy way. Uh-huh. The same thing can happen for Arsenal. So I'm just wondering, like Sancho, you know, big character, he goes some people, he come back, then he go
Rasagul in there,
he go Rasagul in there, then. So I'm just wondering how you keep. Nkunku's not a small player, even though he's been injured, so he can't really say shit.
I agree.
He's not a small player, and eventually, he's gonna start like brother.
I need more minutes here. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and so I'm just wondering how you guys keep that dynamic happy.
Okay, so this is what they asked the same question to Enzo Maresca. Like, I think. Before the West Ham game, this is how he explained it. He says that on the left, these are his players on the left, Mudrik and Sancho. On the right, he has Neto and Madueke.
But Neto has been playing on the left.
Adikam, make a finish. Neto and Madueke for right. Behind the striker or in the attacking midfield position, he has Felix and Cole Palmer. And then, up top, he has Jackson and Nkunku. Now, it's up to the individual players to battle it out for the starting berth. But also, another thing that will determine who starts in the games or who comes on during certain matches is, one, the game states, the opponent, and how we are performing and what dynamic he feels the game requires. So, for instance, in the West Ham game, he felt like between Sancho and Misha, Sancho was better 1v1. And that, because of how good Aaron Wan-Bissaka was 1v1, you needed the more quality player to get past him. Also, he said that if you look at the way West Ham were deploying or they were playing their fullbacks very high. So when Wan-Bissaka goes, you need somebody that can, and this is not good, it's not a good look on Misha though, but somebody that can basically think very quickly on their feet when they get the ball, know what to do.
So he doesn't have a brain. That's what you're saying.
He said that the technical base of Misha is high. Just that if he catches the final third day, nobody knows.
Who feeds Misha?
Mudrik. He says nobody knows what he's going to do there. He prefers players that he can almost predict that this player will make the right decision in the final third. So he thought that in this particular game, Sancho was preferred, even ahead of Neto. Yes, he has played Neto on the left or on several occasions. Sometimes it's because of he wants in swingers, not out swingers. If you listen to him and like how he explains why he chooses who and whatnot, it kind of makes sense. But to keep all of them happy, I know it's going to be difficult.
So it's now time for the Who Am I segment. For those who haven't listened to this segment or watched this segment before, it's our football trivia segment. We give a few clues, then you use those clues to answer which player it is. For this episode, we are going to do it a bit differently. Usually, we direct the question at one person for the person to answer. But for this one, it's open-ended. So whoever gets it first gets the point. So first one. I am a retired English striker who won the FA Cup and Community Shield in 2006. I've been the player of the season for QPR, Portsmouth and Stoke City. I scored 22 goals in 42 matches for England. Who am I?
Peter Crouch.
Correct.
The clubs gave it away. Good guess.
So that's Corey is in the lead now. So second one. I am a Burundian striker who was also a former England under 21 player of the year. I've played for West Brom, Stoke City, and Sheffield Wednesday. Who am I?
Burundi.
Nobody has answered it. You said Benrama. That's not actually the.
Berahino. Hey, baby, it's a cow.
Unless I give him half, because Corey got a first name and Vangela got a second name.
I think,
oh, you said it.
Yeah. Is it a brand new?
Then cancel this question.
Corey won, Zogba won, Vangela no.
I'll try to remember the last name because of Burundi.
Mama said Burundi. You know where Burundi is.
My nigga, I said the last name. Relax.
So
me, I don't know where Burundi is.
So this is the third one. I am an Italian midfielder who won the Coppa Italia with Roma in 2007 and 2008. I also played for Juventus, Fiorentina, and Liverpool. Who am I?
Juventus, Roma.
Fiorentina, Roma, Liverpool.
Italian
midfielder.
Oh no, that guy is Spanish. Coppa Italia, you said, right?
2007-2008. Yes, both 2007 season. So the 2006-2007 season, 2007-2008 season. So back to back.
And try Kai, Liverpool, them are Italian players.
Bro, is the Liverpool that are going through the list like, I don't know if you think the guy.
He told me you're fucking.
I almost thought De Rossi, as he talked the other thing, I killed my mind.
I think De Rossi, no, where I say no. Aquilani.
Correct.
Aquilani.
One inch. So final one, decider. I am a Serbian attacker who was the top assist provider in the Champions League in the 2018-2019 season.
Sergej Milinkovic-Savic.
It's not Savic.
Okay. Is it Serbia?
I've played for Fenerbahce, Ajax, and Southampton. Who am I?
Did you say Serbia?
Correct. Hold on.
Wait, relax. The two of them should be disqualified because they both said names before me.
They said it be.
And they were wrong.
They said it be quick.
Yeah, but if you guess wrong,
they make Boris snatch a chain finish. They can't complain. He go. He left. He didn't secure the salam.
If you guess wrong, you have to be disqualified.
Bro, then snatch your chain. No worry. Cool.
Actually, I don't sense that rule yet. Okay, make an add one. This one off the top of my head.
Okay.
I am a Congolese center back who played for Blackburn in the 2010 season.
Masa, you for make you finish the questions. If I make you finish the question. If I make you finish the question.
So we come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done this already, follow Corey our social snatch media pages on
attack, Twitter attack and Corey Instagram. Make snatch my chain. It'll be easy.
On Twitter and Instagram is ATWPodcastDCR. On YouTube, you can search for After the Whistle Podcast. On TikTok, it's After the Whistle. We are available on all podcast platforms: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Amazon, wherever you go get podcasts, we get it. And as always, Charlie, subscribe to the YouTube again because we are still trying to build that side. So yeah, we appreciate the support on all the platforms and stuff, but we are trying to build the YouTube. So yeah, subscribe to our YouTube, leave a comment, like, share, all that stuff. Again, Zogba, Charlie, thank you so much for joining this one. I know I'll put you on the spot because me, people won't know when Sunday Fufu will come back, but I know
the way the economy had, people know the future of Fufu again.
I'll go tell them.
Okay. Because we are waiting for that.
So we've recorded like 4 episodes. Okay. And we are planning on doing like a Lost Tapes release.
Okay.
Because Abi, right now we are off the grid. So I think we have like 3 episodes we recorded with GCR and like 4 we recorded off. So we just like we might do like a Lost Tapes thing with that stuff. But yeah,
if you do some collab with ATW, invite us, make we come talk about whatever, like what, any topic at all, because we tired of sports topics. Actually, invite us, make come.
I mean, we do one plus Texas and see that one there, jump us. So you people, I don't know what do you think would be a good topic for us to discuss?
Anything, whether politics or anything.
We know if you do politics.
Why not?
The way the system make hot.
It not be even that. If we do politics right now, me, I'm really go back. Because the way Ghana government, they back me right now.
Yeah, so make a convince. Give your opportunity platform, make we all convince for it.
Then I know vex. Corey, your mind
anything, day. Entertainment, politics, like current affairs, anything at all. It doesn't have to be anything specific. So yeah.
What we go do? We go make joke about black women. So say,
no. Don't say I didn't tell you.
I beg you.
Why are we not surprised? All these football boys. That's all they know.
That's what happens to shit and gigs,
guys, thank you again for joining us on this one, and as always, ATW dominates the conversation.
This has been a Gold Coast Reports production. Catch up on episodes and discover more shows from our network on listen2gcr.com.